As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Total Soccer Show and our review of the day the USMNT qualified for the knockout rounds of the 2022 World Cup. Yes, you didn't imagine it. It wasn't a dream. The US are through to the round of 16. It was a tense game that took plenty of guts, but please spare a thought for Christian Pulisic's nuts.
Oh dear.
And England are through with a hint of grandeur after putting to bed a Wales team that were quite poor. Marcus Rashford's goal was tastier than Golden Corral. He'll need to be tastier than chilies when England face Senegal. And speaking of Senegal, they broke Ecuadorian hearts with an impressive victory that was greater than the sum of their parts. And the Dutch topped Group A by trouncing Qatar, and Cody Gakpo remains their main star. It's been fun watching the Dutch enjoy some success, but please, none of that when they face the US. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me today, a man who recently drank from a shoe for the second time. I've seen him do it this week. Taylor Rockwell, hello.
Hello, and the second time in my life at that. It's been an eventful week and an eventful introduction.
Amateur.
Another incredible intro from Ryan. I knew there would be a Pulisic joke in there somewhere, and you still knocked it out of the park. Outstanding work by you, my friend.
Thank you very much, Tater. Joining us, a man whose shoey technique has improved as this tournament has progressed, as you'd expect as a tournament goes on. Joe Lowry, hello.
Hello, Ryan. I still can't get over that game and that moment and all of us being bent over behind the couch in the Bleacher Report studio.
I'm sorry, what?
Hoping that the U.S. would hold on and that wasn't going to be a penalty on Cameron Carter-Vickers. I'm still a little bit in shock.
Yeah, that was a moment.
Yeah, that was a tense moment. We'll get to that very shortly, but not before we introduce a man who's quietly moving all his Netherlands shirts to the back of his wardrobe. Wardrobe. Graham Ruthman, hello.
And moving my USA shirts to the fore of that wardrobe for Saturday. I'm already looking forward to that game. I know we're going to discuss the Iran game and what went right for the US in that game. But yeah, I'm already thinking about how big that game is going to be. It feels big already, doesn't it? About it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I cannot wait. We're definitely going to talk about that. I have a question for you, Graham. Does that mean you have to get a Pulisic jersey?
Yes, it does.
Of
course it does.
About that. I was hoping that no one would pick me up on that, but yes, I believe a bet is a bet. I will be buying a USMNT Pulisic jersey.
Measure to make it be 00 in honor of,
of course,
the region that was harmed.
Yeah, Pulisic right, 00.
There we go.
You should get Pulisic shorts is what you should really get.
Yeah. I did see, Graham, were you wearing Benfica shorts yesterday and then Juve joggers? Was that right?
Yeah, so and an Ajax shirt.
Graham will wear club branded and maybe even player branded lower half clothing items, so never say never.
Yeah, the Pulisic shorts, I might also have to purchase those as well.
Can I just say, by the way, it's International Daryl Grove Day today as we record, with England and USA wins, both teams going through to the next round of the World Cup. Beautiful moment.
It really, really was. It's kind of amazing. I genuinely woke up this morning very, very nervous and then realized what day it was and felt better. Like, it felt like it was like the U.S. cannot fail to get out of the group on International Daryl Grove Day. To be honest, didn't really think so much about England, but I am glad that they did make it out, and I'm not surprised that they topped the group. It was nice to see Ryan Bailey have a moment of joy as they were pretty comfortable in their win, and also that Ryan got, I believe, all of his bets correct today.
Did, yeah. And it's one of those wish I'd put more on them kind of situations. But hey, these things all come out in the wash, don't they? One more thing to get to before we get to the games. Patreon.com/Total Soccer Show for our bonus World Cup content. If you haven't joined the party, please do so. We've got additional podcasts. We've got videos. We've got, Joe, other stuff, right?
Yeah, other stuff. I don't know what video. I think up today we're going to post a video from our soccer game that we all played yesterday. Ooh. I know there is out there. I think Graham might have already posted it on social media, so I don't know if it'll be this video. But there is a video where I have a relatively decent first touch, picking it out of the air. I was pretty proud of that. Either way, there'll be other videos that we have up over the course of this tournament. It's been genuinely, I think, very fun so far, and I'm really happy with the kinds of content that we're putting out. We've had fun with it, and I think folks have had fun with it, too.
Yeah, and by the way, Joe totally undersold his soccer ability.
Big time. Joshua Kimmich, he's now known as the midfield enforcer. Very impressive stuff from Joe, and very impressive stuff on our Patreon. After this recording, I believe we're going to do some player ratings for the US game. So stick around or join if you haven't already on the Patreon.
10 out of 10, party. The whole way across. Is that how it works? Did I do it right?
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Shaq Moore as well?
1 out of 10.
Let's get to it. Iran 0, USA 1. Christian Pulisic with his 22nd US goal making the difference. This one was a nail biter, Taylor, was it not? There was a potential one goal swing here with Iran coming a little too close for comfort in the dying minutes.
Yes, absolutely. And I think really emphasized by that last minute penalty shout, it goes to VAR. It's not given. I was terrified. I could not watch live. When we did the post game show, I speculated that there was a chance that in rewatching, I would feel better about this performance. And that is exactly how that played out. Not just because it was, I could then kind of relax and realize that they had advanced, but also because I think Berhalter, for the most part, got his substitutions correct. I think they played it smart with getting numbers behind the ball, heading it clear. And even that penalty shout, I had not seen a single moment of it. I had my head buried in the couch. I was so nervous. To watch it again and realize that that was never going to be given as a penalty made me feel even better, because it felt in the moment like, oh no, this is how it's all going to end. And that's not how it ended. Instead, on to the knockout round.
I knew it was tense in the room when sort of there was, you know, the ball was in the middle of the field. It wasn't like, it wasn't at either end. There wasn't a threat of a goal. And I was like, Taylor, do you like P.F. Chang's? And you're like, not now.
Yeah. Wait, you were in like the fourth minute of the game. I'm like, should we just have casual conversation? Tactics to be analyzed, players to be watched, and mostly just me unable to focus on anything else because I was very nervous. I mean, yeah, anytime Iran got the ball in that first half, I felt the same way I did whenever England had the ball in the opening minutes of that game. Just anything could happen. You never know. The number one thing I didn't want was for the United States to concede a goal in those first 10 minutes because that changes the entire narrative of this one. So when it felt like the U.S. grew into it a bit more, had more possession, started to play their game, that's when I felt a little more comfortable. That's when I asked you if you wanted P.F. Chang's, but you were busy, I believe, doing other things. It was a swing and a miss situation across the board.
Is now the time to talk about P.F. Chang's?
No.
Patreon. We'll do it there. Joe, this was the youngest starting 11 lineup at the tournament so far for any team. You got to be impressed with the way they handled themselves in a game which was very tricky against an opponent who were, you know, potentially only playing for a draw here and who made it difficult.
100%. I'm thrilled with how this U.S. team played today. They were not perfect, but they checked pretty much all of the boxes. So one of the early boxes, Taylor, you talked about, was not conceding against Iran. And Iran never, I know, Taylor, you're talking about being nervous in those moments because there is always the thought of what could be.
Exactly.
Yeah. Iran were not dangerous, right? And I think we know that now. We knew that even at the time, but it is difficult to remove emotions in that way. But Iran never threatened the U.S. in the first half. They had nothing on the break. Cameron Carter-Vickers had a couple of dicey moments, some good moments as well, which, Graham, you can talk about whenever you want to raise your Celtic flag here, as I know you love to do for Cameron Carter-Vickers. But I mean, the U.S. conducted themselves very, very well in this game.
Can I jump in, Joe? Saying they're not a threat, you could spin it and say that the U.S. limiting that team to one shot on target is a plus.
Absolutely. That was what I was attempting to do, probably poorly, to say Iran weren't a threat because, maybe I hadn't finished my very long point here, because
Sorry,
the U.S.
could,
no, it's fine, because they controlled the game. So, yeah, I love
every
this.
Point you're making.
I'm too tired for this, man.
Joe, go ahead.
U.S. defended good in this game. They did good at defending in transition. Tyler Adams was great. Tyler Adams was great in this match. I think he did a lot of things very well. And the U.S. get their goal. It comes off of an 11-pass sequence that comes off in the 38th minute. Christian Pulisic lays it all, truly all, on the line.
Yeah.
And even all the build-up before then is so clean from the U.S. And maybe I'll do a beat on the U.S.'s possession and Berhalter later on in this show. But yeah, pretty much only things to like in the first half. And even though the second half wasn't as pretty, just as effective in the second half.
Yeah, in the moment, I have to say I wasn't so keen in the drop back to the back three mm-hmm. with Zimmerman coming on.
Absolutely.
But I think in hindsight, it did show a good appreciation of the phase of the match that the US were in and Iran were in. Up until that point, Iran hadn't really got around the US in the wide area, so you didn't really get the sense that they were going to get in behind, that they were going to stretch that defence. And so it was largely about just defending in that moment mm-hmm. and heading them away. And of course, Walker Zimmerman, the giant Viking himself, there's not many players better at doing that at this World Cup. So in hindsight, I do think it was a good appreciation of what the match needed, what the US needed at specific moments of the game.
Yeah, and I think another thing to emphasize here for me is watching this one, it felt a lot like this is how the Wales game played out. US super strong, played a great first half. It seemed like it was going to be there for the win. And then they cede possession, they drop off, they're not as dominant, and they let Wales back in. And I was very nervous that was going to be the case in this game. A thing we talked about in the post-match of that, and we've talked about since, it's a point Joe makes pretty consistently, so I'm going to lift it here, is that the United States has a strong or strong enough starting 11. Once you start getting into some of those bench options, it drops off a little bit. And there are players in that squad who are very good at doing specific things, but not necessarily like-for-like replacements. If Tyler Adams gets hurt or he had been suspended, we don't really have anybody who can do that job. Same thing for some of the attackers. Same thing for some of the number nines, even. They do different things. And so we don't yet have the depth of talent to be able to have like-for-like changes and I think keep that style going. Once you start to change out, when you take out Weston McKinney, Kenny, if you've already brought in Brendan Aaronson, and if Gio Reyna maybe still isn't fit enough to play a game, we're still not quite sure what the situation is there. There's no other real midfielder who can play the technical way that they want to play, but also cover the ground, but also put in those challenges. You have to put in Kellen Acosta, and that's a different type player, so it requires a different setup at that point. So in that way, I didn't love it in the moment. It made me very nervous, but understanding what Iran were doing and what Greg Berhalter was trying to do in response, it makes a lot more sense.
So we had a couple changes from the previous game. We had Cameron Carter-Vickers coming in for Zimmerman, Sargent in for Wright. Graham, how do you feel about those changes?
I didn't expect to see CCV at this World Cup. I have to say, I didn't think once Berhalter settled on Ream as the partner for Zimmerman that he would get a game, frankly. But I guess the theory was that his distribution would help the US play out and play through Iran, who were expected to use a low defensive block or a mid block, as actually turned out to be the case. And I thought he did well in that regard. I can't say there were many stunning line-splitting passes, but he kept
other than ones from Matt Turner. Sorry, I know you're talking about CCV, but I heard line-splitting passes and I had to chime in.
In the second half in particular, there was a couple there where I think they were bypassing the midfield.
Yeah,
and really, there was one that Tim Weah, he kind of whiffed on it and runs out of play. But yeah, we had to kind of check that was Matt Turner that had played that pass. But yeah, CCV I thought did reasonably well in that regard. There wasn't anything kind of stunning, but I thought he kept the supply line open to Dest. There were a couple of diagonal balls that might not have come off, but it kept the US unpredictable in possession. And then the other theory was that CCV just has a bit more recovery pace than Zimmerman. And again, I thought we saw that in moments. There were a couple of moments where it felt like CCV was living on the edge, but he never dived in. Mm-hmm. He used his strength. And in the end, Asmund in particular just never got round him. And there were two moments, we spoke about this on the BR Live show, there were a couple moments when Tyler Adams had to kind of get on him, particularly after the first 5 minutes, where he wasn't stepping high. Asmund was being allowed to bring the ball down. And then after that, I thought he was very good at kind of poking the ball away and making sure that they weren't
agreed.
Able to sustain anything in the final third. I have to say, my heart was in my mouth for the penalty call, but I think looking back at it, there's not enough contact there for a penalty. So I think overall, I agree with you, Joe, a couple of dicey moments, but overall, he delivered when that was difficult. That was a difficult situation for CCV. He has barely played in the cycle for this US, this US team. He's thrown into a side in a must-win game in a World Cup. And as I say, I thought he generally delivered.
All of that is definitely true. It also still made me love Tyler Adams all the more just because there were so many, like, come on, new guy moments of, hey, you're coming into this. We've been playing a certain way. You got to back it up and play that way too. And I think, to his credit, Cameron Carter-Vickers, in those first opening minutes, you mentioned the first one where Adams comes in and has a word. He's dropping off too much. He's sitting too deep, and he's not able to challenge for any of those long clearances. So the U.S. loses two of them. They get flicked on, and now they're on their heels. Those are the moments when I felt like, oh, no, Iran are a bit more aggressive. Adams has a word, and the next three of those CCV steps wins them in the United States retained possession and really start to suffocate Iran as the half goes on. So I think he adapts his game. He has some of those like heart and throat moments for me, but overall, I think in the end he did well enough. I don't know if he'll end up starting because it seems like Greg Berhalter will change it up based on the opponent, but I thought he did enough certainly to get the result and keep it scoreless.
Tyler Adams, another good performance from him. Would we call him our man of the match for this one, Taylor? I think certainly the man of the tournament for the US for me, I'd say. Just
yep.
He just seems to be rising above the parapet in general for this yep. US side, from my observations. Not just on the field, but even the way he handled that Iran press conference as well. He just seems to say the right things, do the right things. He the man.
Watching that press conference again before the game, it feels like that was a scripted question. How good his answer was to that. It was so thoughtful, but like relevant to the topic, but also kind of de-escalates things and wasn't defensive at all. And then extend that to this performance today, and that's what he did. He de-escalates when he needs to, but then he can go and make plays, and he's very thoughtful, and I think maybe slightly aggressive in his communication on occasion, but I think he's very good about picking the team up, about covering ground, about putting out fires. I mentioned this in the BR show as well, that even late in the game, he's still applying pressure higher up the pitch to disrupt Iran and just make them have to think, break them out of their rhythm a little bit. He was everywhere today, and one of the most important things is that he doesn't get a second yellow. He picks up one here, but for the U.S. across the board, nobody's suspended for that knockout round game. So many times in the past when the U.S. has been trying to get out of the group, or they have book their place in the knockout round, it comes at the expense of missing key players due to yellow card accumulation. Very happy that we have Tyler Adams against the Dutch.
And Joe, how about the rest of the MMA midfield, I should say, Musa and McKennie. McKennie here with a lovely ball to set up. Do we call that the MLS assist for the Christian Pulisic
goal? Darn right we do. Darn right we do. And I still am choked up over the fact that Matt Turner didn't get the MLS assist for that Tim Weah goal that was ruled offside, correctly ruled offside right
what
before halftime.
If that had counted, I don't know if Joe Lowry would have, like, he would have floated off.
I was
going
to say, I think I ascend into a higher plane the moment that happens. Yes. Matt Turner, I know I mentioned it, and this is not what you asked. Yeah, right. Matt Turner was unreal in this game with his distribution and has really been excellent at that in this tournament.
Which is something we maybe didn't expect.
No, not at all. I was panicking every single time Matt Turner had the ball against Wales, or maybe it was against England, maybe both. A little less so today because he's shown that repeatedly in this tournament. Ryan, this does connect to the MMA midfield. It does connect to McKennie because Turner, Musa, McKennie, and Adams are all involved in the U.S.'s goal sequence. Mm-hmm. It's an 11-pass sequence. It goes from back. It goes really from the midfield, then back, then front. It involves a really good ball from Matt Turner, I believe, to Tim Weah in the right half space. The passing sequence goes like this. It goes from Musa to Adams to Turner to Weah to Musa to Dest to Adams to Jedi to Adams to McKennie. Then this is where, Ryan, you mentioned that MLS assist. McKennie plays this chipped ball in. It's a beautiful pass over to the right wing for Sergiño Dest, who weights his header perfectly across to Christian Pulisic. That is the single prettiest play the U.S. has had, maybe under Greg Berhalter, certainly at this World Cup. I'd have to go back and think a bit more on the whole Berhalter era thing. It's also the best chance the U.S. has created in this World Cup. This moment, from McKennie, from Musa, from Adams, from other players working off the ball to create space for Christian Pulisic to then run in behind or for Dest to receive in the box, all of this is what Greg Berhalter has been trying to do. From day one in December of 2018, Berhalter takes this job. He talks about changing the way the world views American soccer. He talks about disorganizing the opponent with the ball. The U.S. maybe do both of those things in this game. The changing the way the world sees the U.S. is sort of a harder thing to really quantify. But the U.S. do disorganize the opponent with the ball in this game. They were going to have to coming into this match. That was the only way they were going to beat Iran. I believe Carlos Quiroz talked about, this U.S. team was Ferraris, and maybe relative to some of the talent Iran have or don't have, that's true. And he said, the way to stop Ferraris is to close the highways, which is a great quote, and it is emblematic of how Iran liked to play and how they played in this game. They didn't create space for the U.S. They didn't give the U.S. anything. The U.S. had to make it for themselves. I do think Greg Berhalter deserves some credit for how this U.S. team came out and played today and what he's equipped this team to do. It has not been easy. It has been painful for large stretches of the last almost 4 years now. But today, it worked, and I would bet for Berhalter, it made it all worth it.
And in that goal, those three players that were involved, we saw the best version of those three players. Yep. You have Wes McKennie, obviously, playing the pass. Sergiño Dest, who I thought was, again, very good in this game. I think he's had a good World Cup so far. He's making the run to the byline. The space was in the wide areas for the US repeatedly in this game. And then you have Christian Pulisic crashing the box, making that run to the back post. And actually, I think that's a slightly underrated, underappreciated part of Christian Pulisic's game, is he has those number nine instincts, and we don't see that enough for the US, particularly for a US team where they don't have a goal-scoring number nine that you can count on to score 20 goals a season. Christian Pulisic can, I guess, feasibly share a lot of the load in that regard. So it was pleasing to see Pulisic have those instincts, recognise what phase of the play was in terms of that goal, and make that run, and then put himself on the line. I think he's on. I think he might be in hospital as we're recording this, but it seems like it's just a precaution, and he'll be fine for the Netherlands game.
Put himself and his future children on the line is how I'll phrase that one. But I also think for Pulisic, had a very Pulisic performance in the first half that, I mean, in a positive way, but also kind of a negative way, that we saw those moments where maybe he holds the ball a little bit too long. Maybe he tries too much, tries to take too many people on. But I then wonder if that helps set up that goal, because so many of the attacks were coming down that left-hand side with him going at people and trying to draw people in, that this goal coming from the right-hand side, and it's a ball over the top with Aran kind of condensing into the middle, and then Dest makes that run into space and heads it back across. That's much more of the team play that Greg Berhalter is focused on. And so to have the individual play in the first half, but then the team play be what results in the goal, I agree with Joe. It has to be a very happy moment for Greg Berhalter. Certainly was a happy moment for most U.S. fans, except for maybe, again, like Christian Pulisic's family and friends.
And there was a bounce pass in there as
there
well.
There was.
So.
The quintessential Greg Berhalter game. He really has been building all of the last few years up to this moment.
Did he go over the top with the shoes, though? Where are we on the shoes?
Slightly. Not my sort of style, but yep. Hey, I'm not going to criticize him today. This is your day, Triple GB. I'm working on that nickname.
Would you have consumed a beer out of them?
I feel like they're quite efficient for a shoey, actually. Maybe that's what he was going for. There were some shoeys after the game.
We don't know how that post-game went, yeah.
You drink a beer out of Tyler Adams' boots, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You probably drink his bathwater, I'm guessing.
that may be a bit too far, but, you know, I mean, I don't know, like, what kind of shampoo is he using?
Taylor didn't say no to be clear.
I didn't hear a denial.
Expertly dodged.
And just one more note before we hit the break. So, Gino Dest's hair, Graham, there was a big talking point in our show about oyster grey, I believe, the colour. Is that what Aguero has as well? Oyster grey, possibly? Very fashionable.
It is very fashionable, and I guess you can get away with it when you're playing at a World Cup and being really good. So I think I said in the BR live show, if the US wins the World Cup, I'll dye my hair oyster grey in honour of Sergino Dest.
So if the US wins a World Cup round of 16 game, Graham is going to dye
his hair. That's what I heard.
We all heard it. It's on record.
I mean, we've established, put it to a vote. All in favour?
If he scores in that game against Netherlands, I will.
Graham keeps making up these things that he actually wants to do, but feels a need to tie to the U.S. men's national team. He wanted to buy a U.S. jersey, even though he knows they're ugly. He wants to dye his hair gray. I mean, Graham, you could just do this stuff. You don't have to ask.
Okay,
you're
sure.
You're a big boy.
I'll just do it. No, I'm not going to do it.
So, if England take to the field this weekend for a game, I will eat a steak.
Okay.
Oh, how's that sound?
Bold, Ryan.
At Chili's.
Of course. Where else would I get one?
No. Ryan does not get steaks at Chili's. He gets crispy chicken crisper chickens.
Yeah, they're delicious. Anyway, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, a deep analysis of Qatar's three losing games. Just kidding. More US stuff. Back shortly.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to the programme. Taylor,
yes,
we have to give Greg Berhalter credit
for
this run into the round of 16. Where does it bring his standing in the game? I mean, whatever happens here, the US have gone through. Like, we can say what we like about the route there, but
yeah,
it's happened.
Absolutely. And I think we talked about the England game being the most important game of his tenure at that point. We talked about this game being the most important game of his tenure after getting that draw against England. Here we are in both of those games to get 4 points, to not lose a game in this group stage. And I heard Matt Doyle make this point. For the U.S. to have played or have been the better team in 5 of the 6 halves they've played in this World Cup or thereabouts is not a thing I expected heading into this competition. Certainly would like a few more goals. I was really hoping for a 2-0 win here, mostly just for my own like sanity and stress and blood pressure and everything. But I think there's going to be plenty of people who still doubt Greg Berhalter and are waiting for the U.S. to crash out. And I don't know if he'll end up renewing. We've had that conversation many times, if U.S. soccer will want him to or if he'll walk away. But I think if you see his time in charge of the U.S. men's national team as leading up to this World Cup and getting out of the group, he has achieved that along the way. He has beaten Mexico in meaningful competitions, which is always a very important metric for U.S. M&T managers. And I still think that there's an opportunity for the United States against the Dutch. And if that happens and they make it as far as they ever have, then you have to kind of reevaluate again. It feels like each game keeps being important. But at this point, he is a little bit playing with house money. I hope it doesn't end up 3-0, but I really do think there are some chances there for the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, getting out of the last 16 was the baseline. That is a tick in that box. I am not quite ready to
getting
make...
out of the last 16 or getting into
the... Sorry, into getting it, into the last 16, getting out of the group.
That's
yeah,
a
was,
check, not a tick.
All right,
yeah.
a check in that box, right, okay. But nonetheless, that is
a... If I check that box, I'm going to buy a pair of shoes. I'm Graham Ruther. There you go.
Okay. That is a relative success for the U.S. under Berhalter. I am not quite ready to make... I'm not saying you were doing this, Taylor, but I am not quite ready to draw kind of solid conclusions yet. I don't think I'm quite fully on board with. There have been parts of periods in these in the games at this World Cup where the US has played the way that he wants to, but I think I look at what has been key to the US doing relatively well at this World Cup, getting out of the group, and it's the defence. It's the strength of the defence. The US are unbeaten. I think they are a very difficult team to play against, and I think actually knockout football against the Dutch, that could be a good matchup. But Joe, if you're talking about the mission statement of what is it, kind of disorganising
the opponent
with possession,
with the ball, yeah.
I think we've seen that in periods of games, but we haven't seen it in full fruition yet.
Yeah.
That's just why I'm not totally there yet. So I think there will have to be a re-evaluation at the end of this World Cup, but given the criticism he's faced before this tournament, he can feel pretty good about how he's proven a lot of doubters wrong.
And I don't think you have to be all the way there. I'm not really all the way there either. I don't think really anybody should be all the way there on Greg Berhalter.
Agreed.
But at the same time, I think this game was really the culmination of a lot of what he's tried to do, and the U.S. succeeded today. Like, they played his way. They played this, we're going to control the ball because we have to, because Iran were never going to do it coming into this match. They controlled the ball, and they created the best chance of their World Cup so far, and maybe one of the best goals, period, as a team of the World Cup so far as well. That counts for something. I don't love, and we've made this clear, Taylor, you and I and Graham, the three of us, and Ryan, the four of us, over the last, you know, however many years now, we've made it clear, I think I've made my opinion clear, that the U.S. has not always gone about things in certainly the way that I would have or what I believe the right way. You can talk about personnel, you can talk about tactics, you can talk about game management. All of those things apply. I don't think Greg Berhalter has nailed any of those things, nor do I think he would tell you that either. But I do think the U.S. did well today. They played Greg Berhalter's way. And if they hadn't had this this foundation to play this sort of possession-based soccer against a low block, then maybe they don't get out. Maybe we're having an entirely different conversation. So Berhalter deserves credit. I think he was vindicated in a lot of respects today. But we also don't have to go back retroactively and say, wow, like, man, this guy is a genius and he nailed everything. I don't think that's fair either. It has to be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. I think what I can say, like, there's two sides to this for me. The first is, like, looking at the changes he makes in this game, I don't love them in the moment. I'm still not sure I love them now, but they get the job done. And against Wales, he doesn't go to a back five. He doesn't make some of those more defensive changes. He just has the U.S. play more defensively, and it doesn't work. So in that way, I think you can make an argument that he learned his lesson from that game and really made the U.S. play more defensively and put personnel in there that allow them to execute that game plan. That said, there are still opportunities here where the U.S. could play better, could be more proactive, could be more on the front foot, and we don't know if a different coach, a better coach, could make them play that way, if it is talent issues, if it is personnel issues. All I can say is that he has achieved – the minimum that I was looking for in this World Cup of getting out of the group, and that is more than you can say for other managers from CONCACAF at this point, especially Mexico's manager, who I long thought should have been the U.S. Manager. Here we are with the U.S. getting out and Mexico needing some help and to get a result that they haven't yet gotten. It's a confusing world we live in where it seems that Greg Berhalter is the most stable CONCACAF coach at this point.
And I think, Taylor, you make the point there about learning lessons. That is the key part for me, because this is... Was it the youngest, you said, Ryan, the youngest team at this World Cup today?
It was the youngest, I think it was the youngest team that's like the youngest starting 11 today.
Yeah.
Bunch of little babies.
Yeah.
So there is going to be a learning process. That is natural. You're not going to have any team in world football, international or club soccer, that there's not going to be that learning process. So you need a manager that is willing to accept when he's wrong, I guess. And maybe we did see that shift to a back five, an admission from Berhalter that he did get something wrong in that second half of that Wales game. And if he continues that progression, then that's a good thing.
So Berhalter won't be getting the sack. The only person who got the sack today was Iran's goalkeeper, of course, during that goal movement. What do we think, Joe, about the substitutes that were made in the second half?
Oh, goodness
Sorry,
gracious.
I couldn't resist.
I mean, I'm laughing.
Pulisic obviously coming out for Brendan Aaronson. Then we had Kellen Acosta coming in, Hadji Wright for Josh Sargent. Shaq Moore and Walker Zimmerman coming on with around 10 minutes of regular time to go as well. Did we like those movements?
Okay, so there's a few different beats that I want to do here. The first is a couple of the injury-related subs. I thought bringing Aaronson on for Pulisic, if it's not going to be Reyna, and I did want it to be Reyna, we still don't know what's going on there. Taylor, you said that. I don't have anything else to say about Gio Reyna for the purposes of this game, other than hoping that he's back for the Netherlands. Who knows what's happening there? Aaronson, I thought, made sense. It was for an injury. I get that. The same goes for Hadji Wright, who comes on midway through the second half. Josh Sargent picks up a leg injury of some kind. It didn't look very good. Apparently, he was crying on the sidelines as he was taken off in this game, according to Jenny Taft on the Fox broadcast. So I don't know what's going on there exactly.
Yeah. My hope is that, so it looks like he hyperextends it, but my hope would be that he jams it. It's really, really uncomfortable. I've had that happen before without tearing anything. I have also had that happen and torn everything in my knee. It can really go either way. So it might just be that the emotion of having to be substituted out, of not being able to finish that game, or of being afraid that something has happened has gotten to him. It could also be that it's a much more severe injury.
Sure.
I will certainly hope that it is the less severe of the two, because I thought he was really good in this game. And I also think thus far we haven't seen another number nine who can do what he can do for the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, his performance, I know we have a very small sample size of only three games, but his performance today I thought was the best number nine performance we've seen from a U.S. player at this World Cup. I thought his hold-up play was very good. He was timing his runs well. There was a couple of times when he was able to get in behind in the box, bring the ball down. I think there's one instance where he brings the ball down, he lays it back to Tim Weah, who has a pretty wayward shot, admittedly. But it was the first time in this tournament I thought we'd seen the number nine kind of conduct attacks. And I guess that's when you don't have a number nine that you're hitting with crosses and asking to finish chances in the box. I guess someone that conducts the attack and brings others into the game is probably what you're hoping for. And we saw that in periods from Josh Sargent.
I would say our friend and, I suppose, colleague Paul Tenorio had a series of tweets in which he seemed to grow increasingly frustrated with Hadji Wright, specifically his lack of defensive pressure as the game was ticking away. There wasn't much pressure being applied to the Iranian players playing the ball into the box, hitting those long balls. Joe, we talked about why it was maybe Josh Sargent over Jesus Ferreira to start the game, but you have also made a point that Jesus Ferreira is quite good in the press.
Yep.
Doesn't it feel like this could have been the opportunity, or do you feel like Hadji Wright was also there to alleviate some of that pressure with his presence on the ball, even though that didn't really happen in this game?
I'll try to say this in the nicest way possible. I don't care.
Okay.
Like, I mean, that's how I've been about the nines all along, right? Wright brings more hold-up play than Ferreira, so I can see the benefit there if you think about the U.S. needing to alleviate pressure one way or the other. Wright is going to be the bigger-bodied guy to help you do that, at least relative to Jesus Ferreira. Ferreira might buzz around a little bit, but he doesn't have the same back-to-goal ability that Hadji Wright does, nor does he really slip in behind as well as Hadji Wright. So this is one of those cases, and I want to loop it all the way back to Ryan's sub discussion as well. This is one of those cases where I can see both paths, right? I can understand Paul being frustrated with Hadji Wright not moving around. I would need to go back and rewatch that more closely to understand that a bit better. But, like, I can see Berhalter's reasoning one way or the other to go with Wright, to go with Ferreira, or to even go with Sargent to start the game. Like, for me, there's just still not enough separating these players, and there probably wasn't enough separating them at the end of this match either for me to have really a strong preference. The other subs in this game, which I think are the more polarizing ones than the one I mentioned so far, just to make sure that we get them in their proper categories. Kellen Acosta as well doesn't really fit in this category. He comes on the bench. He comes off the bench for Weston McKennie, who looked like had a little bit of a knock. He should be fine. I was fine with that sub in the second half. It's Zimmerman and it's Shaq Moore that got people riled up about this game and about Greg Berhalter again. Berhalter chose a different path, right? So there's two options. I mentioned this in the BR postgame show. Option one is to try to continue to go for it and continue to really step and be aggressive and do all of the things that the U.S. did in the first half. Option two is to pack it in. And Berhalter chose the second option. I think the U.S. could have gotten 3 points with both. He decided to go to a back five, which made it maybe more nerve-wracking than the other option would have been. Mm-hmm. But I think there's reasons for it. Iran are not dangerous in the attack. So he said, yeah, we'll let you cross the ball in. We'll deal with that. And it worked. So at the end of the day, I don't think I have any issues with those subs.
Does Shaq Moore come on just because of his perceived better ability defensive
to make me angry? Yes, that's why he comes on. Yes.
No, but seriously, like,
because they saw Keith Moore was so good in the other game.
Okay,
he needed
sure.
Moore involved,
yeah,
basically.
Sure, of course, that checks out. But is Shaq Moore seen as a more defensive-minded player than Sergino Dest? Is that why he comes on in that phase of the game? Because otherwise, I am sort of struggling. I mean,
yeah,
there was some suggestions that Sergino Dest was tiring a little bit, but I didn't really see that to any great degree. It still felt like he was quite influential, so that one was confusing to me.
I would assume you're more comfortable with Moore staying home than Dest. The other thing I was going to say is a yellow card situation with Dest, but if you're already getting ahead of yourself to think about the knockout rounds and you haven't gotten out of the group yet, I think you're doing it wrong. So I don't think that argument that I was thinking about in my own head makes any sense. I think Moore you trust to stay back a little bit deeper. Maybe you trust him more in 1v1 defensive duels. It's just, I mean, Taylor, you and I were talking about this before we started recording. Just none of the backup right back options are ones that you feel super excited about other than Joe Scally. But are you bringing on is he a teenager? Is he 20? I don't remember how old he is. Are you bringing him on to close out a game at right back? Probably not, right?
Joe going against his own youthful demographic.
I know,
here.
And my own namesake as
his
well.
Own kind.
Also that.
His people.
If we're talking about like the team learning from past mistakes, it does feel like they learned DeAndre Yedlin isn't going to be the defensive right back we needed him to be, or the outlet with the speed that we needed him to be. So in comes Shaq Moore against England, and I thought he was not good. I thought he was, I guess, okay defensively, but on the ball, I talked about the one where he goes on a dribble and sort of dribbles the way like you would steer a boat if you didn't know how to steer it. It's a weird back and forth. He doesn't really have it under control. He gives the ball away a couple times, and he does the exact same thing in this game. There's the one where they have a free kick. It's taken short. It's clearly meant to be slow it down, keep the ball, and he passes it literally to an Iranian player and launches a counterattack with the U.S. having numbers committed forward. This felt like one where I would have liked to see Joe Scally. I feel like, why not? Why not roll the dice?
Do you need to change Dest out, though, at all? That's kind of my point.
I'm saying if it is, like, there was some reporting that he had said that part of the frustration that people saw in the England game was that he was mad that they hadn't protected him against some of the physicality of England, but also that he was maybe overplaying or playing too many minutes, that's what he yelled at Greg Berhalter when he came off. Whether or not that's the case, I think Joe has made the point that it could be the yellow card accumulation. I think you could leave him on, and I would have been okay with it, but if you are going more defensive, I just did not expect to see Shaq Moore in this game because of the way he played against England, and I hope we don't see him against the Dutch. It's not meant to be a shot at Shaq Moore. It's just evaluating the way he plays. I don't think he makes the U.S. better, and I'm not sure he adds enough on the defensive side to justify that. I'd rather see Sergino Dest play 80, and then, I don't know, Walker Zimmerman come in and play right back or something. But if you're not going to go Joe Scally, who I would rather have there.
A lot of chat before the game about Gio Reyna once again. Mm-hmm. Graham, do we assume that he's still carrying a niggle kind? Because, I mean, obviously, it's probably not appropriate to bring him on in the last 25 minutes of this game because it's not the kind of play you need at that point. But, I mean, he could, for the Netherlands, do we see him playing a role? Against the Netherlands, I should say.
Probably not, given what we have seen so far at this tournament. At this point, I mean, you say that, Ryan, the final phase of the game, I understand that with the US bunkering, but there was a phase of the game where he could have come on and helped in possession, certainly in terms of playing against a low defensive block. This game and the Wales game, he surely could have been useful in those two games. So, yeah, I don't think it's too much of a leap now to assume there is a fitness issue or an injury issue. Obviously, that's par for the course, unfortunately, with Gio Reyna at this point in his career. So I wouldn't count on seeing him in any great role against the Netherlands on Saturday.
All right, next up is that Netherlands game on Saturday. It's 10 a.m. on Saturday Eastern, that is. We feeling bullish about that one, Joe?
I don't know about bullish, but doable, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I watched the Netherlands game against Qatar pretty closely. I've watched their other group stage games pretty closely. I know a lot of us have. They are a good team with some game-changing talents, especially in Cody Gakpo up top. He's a phenomenal player that the U.S. will have difficulty shutting down. Don't get it twisted. But, I mean, this Netherlands team have not created a ton of chances from game to game. Their attack has been pretty reliant on Gakpo and pretty reliant on crosses as well. I thought they were better today against Qatar, but Qatar, the worst team at the World Cup, so that's not a huge surprise. And then defensively, Ryan, I think the Netherlands are fairly open. They like to man mark through midfield. They're happy to extend their center backs, the outside center backs, forward in defense as well. So they'll track runners that drop into midfield. I think this team can be vulnerable. The U.S. should not be favored in this match. The Dutch have more talent. They have more game-breaking talent than the U.S. I think that's pretty clear. But it's doable. Yeah, totally doable.
The U.S. have already shown that they're pretty strong when they channel their play out to the wide areas. And I think, I can't remember what game it was, Ryan. They're all merged into one at this point. But a previous Dutch game that I watched, I highlighted that they were very poor in the wide areas. And so if the U.S. can isolate them in those part of the pitch, then I think that in that part of the pitch, then I think that will be key. And also, I think if the U.S. can close up the space between the midfield and the defence, so the theory is that you stop Cody Gakpo running at you like he did today against Qatar. If, and it's a big if because he's very talented, if you can do that, then it becomes about executing your game plan in quick transition. So yes, the individual talent gap is there in favour of the Dutch, but in terms of the matchup, there could be a lot worse matchups. We just come out of a group for the US where we all agreed the group was bad for the US in terms of the tactical matchup. This, in theory, could be a little bit better. It's one of the better round of 16 games that the U.S. could have had.
I agree. I think Tyler Adams versus Cody Gakpo will produce enough energy to like power the planet for a couple of years, so we've got a clean energy solution there. That's nice. But I think we could also see the front two for the United States, if they continue to do the kind of 4-4-2 defensive shape, that they could try to screen the Dutch midfield, and then Adams can sit on Gakpo, and suddenly you've kind of clogged that middle. I don't know how Netherlands being in a back three will influence that, if that changes what the United States are going to try to do, but I think it's going to be a really fascinating game, and I think there will be opportunities for the United States, especially in behind, if you have Tim Weah doing some of the Tim Weah things we've come to know and expect. I would love to hear y'all's thoughts about Tim Weah from tonight, because I was pretty hyped on him, but that doesn't seem to have been the consensus. The only other thing I will say about the U.S. heading into that Dutch game, I saw a stat from Doug McIntyre. Can you guess the last time the U.S. kept consecutive clean sheets at the World Cup?
Oh, I think I saw this. I won't guess.
All right, we'll go to Graham then.
The 94 or something like that.
1930.
Yeah, oh, wow.
That is the last time the United States has kept two clean sheets. So that's no small feat. Matt Turner doing big things. The defense looking solid. You never know. You never know. But with that said, what do we think about Tim Weah?
I think he was okay in this game. I'm not sure he was great. I'm not sure he was bad either. He has a couple of sort of memeable moments in this match where he dribbles right out of bounds. Taylor, I think you referenced it earlier. Maybe that was on a different show. I don't remember at this point. But
it's been mentioned. Somebody mentioned it somewhere. Sometime.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. He was okay in this game. He had some nice layoffs, a good one in the 38th minute on the goal sequence that comes from the ball from Matt Turner. He's able to key some of those kinds of moments. I found myself a little frustrated with him in this game because he never really seemed to take on an opposing defender. I don't think he loves to really face someone up and dribble right by them. I'm not sure that's in his bag, and this game would have been a helpful one, I think, to pull out some of that stuff. So all told, not a bad match, but maybe not a perfect one either.
That's a really good call. You're right. That I think anytime anybody's like close in on him and they're facing each other, he's got that little burst of speed, but I don't think he's good enough on the ball, enough with like the little like 1-2 foot skills to get by the person. It's usually when he's got them on the run, when he's got a ball in behind, or when he's in a foot race, that's where you're going to see him pull out some tricks and make an impact. So yeah, good shout, Joe.
I thought he got into good areas, but his execution was maybe lacking in a couple moments. And in general, I thought that was true of a number of the US attackers. There was one attack in particular where you have Pulisic, Sargent, I think it was, and Weah going at, I think it was a 3-on-2 situation actually for a moment. And Tim Weah actually, we kind of talked about this after the fact, it kind of looked like maybe Weah was the one that had let the attack down. But I think his run is a decoy run to create the space for Pulisic, and he's surprised that Sargent plays the ball to him. The ball should have gone to Pulisic, and then he's through on goal. So there were some nice moments from Weah and then some poor moments of execution, but that was kind of a common theme throughout the match.
And I think, to look ahead to Saturday, I think Tim Weah is the perfect winger for the U.S. to play against Netherlands, because there will be space in behind, there will be opportunities to drag them around and then play in behind. Tim Weah is like the guy on this U.S. squad that I think I want doing that stuff.
So if we're saying he was like a 5.5 or a 6 out of 10, if that goal had stood, the one that was disallowed for offside at the very end of the first half, another outside of the foot finish that he tings off the post, that would have made it a 15 out of 10, I think, because that was such a good finish from such a strange angle. But in the end, it doesn't stand, and you're right, Graham. He makes that overlapping run, and I think that's a really clever run. But it ends up looking like a breakdown play because I think Sargent goes for Weah over Pulisic. So a few missed opportunities there, and it could have been a different evening. But all the same, 3 points, USA advances, life good.
Woo, life good indeed. We're going to carry on the US chat on our Patreon. Just one more question. I'll go around the horn for you. Of the US campaign so far, of the group stage campaign, can you mentioned a rating out of 10 there for Weah. Let's have a rating out of 10 for the US so far in terms of expectations met, in terms of attainment as well. Graham.
And difficult in terms of expectation. Do you want me to weight it against expectation or just a general rating?
Just give me a number, Graham.
Okay, 7 out of 10.
Great.
Yep. 7 out of 10. That's where I was.
8 for me. 8 out of 10.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go with the 7-8 as well. Why not?
The old 7-8.
The old 7-8 split.
7.5. All right, guys. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to look at the rest of the games from this here Tuesday, including England's lovely win over the Welsh. Back shortly.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back. Let's take a quick look at Wales 0, England 3. Full disclosure, listener, we were mostly focusing on the US game for this one, but I had my eye on this screen as well. It was a Marcus Rashford brace with a lovely free kick. Was this the first direct free kick goal of the tournament, I believe?
We think so, yes.
We think so, right. I believe it is. It was very nice indeed.
Was it helpful when we all nodded at you when you asked us a question on a podcast?
Like, yeah. Vocalizing these things is generally a good thing.
Yes, Ryan, we think it was the first direct free kick goal.
Thank you. And we also think that Phil Foden got a start in this game, and he got a goal for his efforts there as well. We had some few changes in this lineup with Henderson, Foden and Rashford all starting. Maybe they've all earned their way into a game at the weekend for the next game against Senegal. But this was a very typical England story. It's the flow of the game that I expected. I did predict a draw in the first half, a cagey first half, sterile possession in the first half, basically what England do best, hogging the ball but creating very little in the final third, which is generally what we saw in the first half, and then just needed 5 to 10 minutes for the game to open up at the start of the second half, and then went back to sterile possession straight afterwards, which is, I actually admire Gareth Southgate more after this tournament than I have before, because I think he's managed these games perfectly.
Yes.
You know, when he's needed it, it's been an aggressive, high-press style like we've seen against Wales, and we saw it against Iran as well. But when he knows the team needs to sit back and perhaps play for a draw, I think that's what he did against the US as well. So I think Southgate deserves more credit than he gets in some quarters, Joe.
I think that's fair. I mean, I don't always love watching this England team. I don't love watching them have those bits of sterile possession given the amount of talent they have. Mm. But you're right, Ryan. Gareth Southgate has managed these games pretty much perfectly. He didn't really need more than a draw out of the U.S. game. England played for a draw.
Yep.
He didn't really need more than a draw or really much of anything at all out of this game. England wait for the game to break open. It just so happens that Marcus Rashford is the one who breaks it open, right, with the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then he scores again, and Foden scores in between. I mean, England have the talent to drop three goals on you in the blink of an eye. They have the talent to drop six goals on you in the blink of an eye. It's irritating to watch that talent go to waste at times. It's irritating to watch Phil Foden sit on the bench for two entire games, or basically two entire games. But, I mean, this team, I think, has managed their group stage run pretty much perfectly and should be in position to beat Senegal on Sunday.
And I think if you look at other aspects of this team in this game, it's another clean sheet, which I think is pretty important. As you mentioned there, Joe, it's Foden and Rashford scoring, which I think has to give the whole squad a little bit of a bump, just that you've got more attacking options and more people scoring. But it is also a game where you are able to rest some people and play some people that you might not otherwise have played. And then Kyle Walker comes in. And I had Kyle Walker pipped as when we did our previews as like the most important player for England. Wasn't fit, wasn't going to be able to start the tournament. Having him back allows you to have him as a right back, also allows you to play him as a right center back if you want to go with a back three against stronger opposition. And I think it really does give England momentum with three goals scored, with another clean sheet, with players coming back, with players scoring goals. I feel like it's the exact result that was needed to maybe just bring back a little bit of confidence for England after that draw against the US.
Ryan, do you want to see Marcus Rashford play against from the start against Senegal on at the weekend?
I mean, he was certainly impressive in this game. Yeah. Wales weren't up to much, so I'm aware of that. But, I mean, if you score two goals in the
game... How dare you dismiss their zero big chances and 0.35 expected goals?
Yeah. How dare you? That made me so happy, Taylor.
Their first chance on goal was in the 50th minute. So that tells you a lot of about the lack of positive intent, the negative intent they may have had in this game. This game, Graham, though, did have the sexiest moment of the World Cup for me. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Jude Bellingham, when he receives the ball about 5 yards outside the box. I don't know what you call the move where you turn 180 with the ball and lay it off simultaneously, like a twist pass of some sort. Very sexy indeed. And he set up Phil Foden for a shot which went a few yards over the bar. But if that had gone in, I would have melted into my chair.
I think I called his performance against Iran earlier in the tournament Zidane-esque, and that felt like a very Zidane moment. So I would further draw that comparison.
If Matt Turner played a ball over top to Jude Bellingham who did that into a goal, would that just be it for you two? Would that just, oh, there's the high five, and I feel like you all would just, that we would never see you again.
I think I'm just, I'm just going home, kind of done with soccer.
It's like when we were playing pickup last night, I was saying anytime you score a really good goal, you just have to sub yourself out. Like, that's it, I'm done, I'm leaving on a high note. Like, that's it, I assumed you two would have just walked out of the studio, we never would have seen you again.
We would have completed soccer, as you said. Yeah, we don't need to carry on.
The World Cup is over, soccer is over. Well said.
The soccer will be finished because it reached its zenith.
We did it. We can stop playing the sport now. New games needed.
Exactly so. So I'm pleased with England's progress. I'm feeling quite bullish, to use that word again, for the game against Senegal, which I might not have felt immediately after the US game. But now I've got an appreciation, an understanding of the master plan that was going on with Gareth Southgate.
I can't wait for England to look like they did against Wales today and still grab a 1-0 win at the end, and for Ryan to be extremely irritated about all of this again. It's going to be fun.
It is.
Really excited about that.
Trust the process, right? Trust the process.
Let's clip this for some.
I will say a note on Wales, who have to be very disappointed with how this tournament's gone, quite obviously. Gareth Bale coming out at halftime with an injury, and then the team subsequently falling apart very quickly afterwards. Not necessarily related incidents, but
definitely very related incidents, yeah.
Potentially so. But very, very anticlimactic for the Welsh. Their first World Cup in 64 years. I'll tell you what, Graham, Michael Sheen needs to write a really good poem now to get this Wales team back on track.
Yeah, he needs to start now for the Euros in 2024.
Start on that delivery. Yeah, so... That's pretty much all I've got to say about the game. I do think that I'd like to see Rashford and Foden start the next game, though, because thems were good in this game.
Were thems actually better than Sterling and Saka had been?
Definitely Sterling. I've had Foden and Sterling 100% every time. Yeah, I don't think he's been super effective in this tournament, Sterling, thus far.
Yeah, of the bits that I saw of this match, Rashford in particular just seemed to be absolutely electric, and he scores in the Iran game. He's been in good form for clubs. So, I would agree on the... on the Sterling side of things, I think with Saka, maybe he gives you a bit of width, and Foden maybe congests things a little bit more. But yeah, I think Rashford should probably start against Senegal.
Nice to have the option, huh?
Yep.
There we are.
Can't quite relate.
Shaq Moore up top.
There it is. There it is, Taylor.
There we go. So that's Group B, England and the US going through. TSS victory all round, Graham Rutherford, very happy with both of those teams going through.
Sorry, Graham.
We move briefly to Group
A. Still better than Wales going through, somehow.
Yeah? Do you really feel that way?
Well, I'm used to it with England by now. I'm still not used to Wales being good.
Okay. Better the devil you know, all that kind of thing.
Indeed, yeah.
Okay, all right. Group A, the Netherlands and Senegal going through. Ecuador 1, Senegal 2. No Mane, no problem, huh? Huh? Senegal leapfrogging Ecuador.
I cannot believe that. I really cannot believe that. Like, I think we had them. Joe and I did our rankings of teams when we did our tiers of the teams that were going to be at the World Cup, and we had Senegal in the happy to be here category specifically because of that Mane injury. Not just that Senegal are just a team built around him; they're not. But he is such an important player for them as an attacker, but also as a facilitator, as a player who can hold up the ball, who can draw fouls, who can do so many things, and is just a veteran leader who has such high profile. For him not to have been there, I had no expectations for them, and for them to battle the way they have, play some really good soccer at times, play some really practical soccer at other times, to fight back today after being pegged back. It's a really, really impressive performance for me from Senegal.
And that's where Ismaïla Sarr has really stepped up as a difference maker for Senegal. I also subscribe to the idea that Senegal might be going out in the group stage of the tournament because Mane was their difference maker. But Sarr in this game, he wins the penalty from which Senegal scored their first goal. He made good runs in behind. He was making good decisions. And he's really filled that void as the difference maker in the final third. And some stats here. So at this tournament, he leads Senegal for shots on goal, 9. He is second for chances created. And only Kylian Mbappe can better Sarr's total of 6 chance-creating carries in this tournament with 8. That's from Opta. So that kind of tells you just how influential he has been for Senegal. In terms of this game, I thought in terms of the spectacle, obviously we found the US-Iran game particularly engrossing, but we are slightly biased in that regard. I thought this was the most captivating match of the day. This was everything you ideally want from a final group game. There were different phases in the game. You had one team reacting to the other, and then vice versa. You had loads of tension. It was really fast. It was direct. And actually, I thought it was one of the best games of the tournament so far.
Wow.
From Ecuador's point of view, I feel very sorry for them, Ecuador, because they basically played one bad half of soccer at this World Cup, and now they're going home. But I guess that's the stakes in a group like Group A, where there is a parity between 3 of the 4 teams in that group. It's harsh on them, though.
And the Ecuador players will look very devastated at it. You do feel for them. I've kind of been mentally gearing up the last few days for England to face Ecuador, and now I don't know what to make of it. Because, as you say, this was a great final game, because we had a leapfrog in the tables as well, and maybe not one that was expected.
Yeah, indeed, and I think Senegal have the potential to give England problems, or maybe not so much problems in an attacking sense, but I think they can frustrate England. I think the physicality in this game, so we've seen teams at this World Cup not really handle Ecuador's physicality. Both Qatar and Netherlands struggled in that regard, but I thought Senegal did a really good job of that. They had a lot of joy as well in getting in behind Ecuador defence, so obviously that's something that the England is vulnerable with, the recovery pace of Harry Maguire and John Stones, so that could be a weak point for them to target. Idrissa Gana Gueye, he was good in this game. He's pushed up in behind Dia, but he actually gets a booking in this match, so he won't be available for the England game, so that is a blow.
It's a shame.
You're gutted about that. But Senegal, as I say, have the potential to trouble England. They score both goals from set pieces, one being a penalty, of course, but the second one, Koulibaly's winner, is from a set piece.
Yep.
And I also think that's an area where they could trouble England. So England definitely the favourites, but it's not going to be a gimme for them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's wild to me that they get that free kick and the set-piece goal from kickoff, having just conceded. It felt like they were still showing Ecuador fans celebrating as Senegal set up to take their free kick that they then scored from. So, again, that immediate fight back was really, really impressive. Graham, I know we were pretty enthralled by this game, and I understand why. I would say it wasn't the most technical of games. My prediction for this one was that both teams would have fewer than 400 passes completed, so fewer than 400 for Ecuador, fewer than 400 for Senegal. Ecuador had 336 with a passing completion of 77. Senegal had 181 passes completed, 68% completion rate. So definitely neither team really trying. I'd say Senegal especially, I think, as the game goes on, not trying to create all that much, content to kind of sit back and frustrate. But in the way that you get the kind of back and forth, you get that spectacle, you get Senegal leapfrogging, I think, a pretty captivating game.
Yes, indeed. And one more note on the lack of Mane. All 5 of Senegal's goals have come from 5 different scorers as well. So they got a lot of talent across the field from an attacking perspective. So congratulations to Senegal. All celebrations for the Senegalese at the Mia Khalifa Stadium today. The other game we need to talk about from Group A, Netherlands 2, Qatar 0. Cody Gakpo and Frankie de Jong getting the goals to seal this one. Joe, it felt in this game that the Netherlands could have scored even more possibly. And they've gone from failing to qualify at the last World Cup up to being unbeaten and facing the mighty U.S. in the next round.
I actually do wonder how the Netherlands feel about facing the U.S. and what their perspective is. Maybe we can do some reading, and I'll at least be curious to hear about what the Dutch perspective is about that game. I
mean, Serginho Dest is probably going to have some feelings about it, I'll tell you that much.
I am sure he is. I hope he just wears his fake Chicago Bulls jersey over the next 2 days and feels better. I don't know what his mentality is going to be. Either way, Ryan, the Netherlands I thought were good in this game. I said it earlier, but Qatar, real bad, and were real bad in this match. Did virtually nothing to trouble the Netherlands, but there were a few different moments in this game that I think told all of us what the Dutch are about. They're playing in this back three that we've seen them use all throughout the tournament. They have in this match, it's De Roon, who's in midfield. So I believe the third different central midfield combination for the Netherlands from game to game to game. De Roon is playing more as a number six, and De Jong and Klaassen are pushed up more almost as dual number eights. But the width for the Netherlands comes exclusively from the wingbacks. It did in this game. It was Dumfries really getting forward on that right side. And then it was Memphis Depay and Cody Gakpo as the two strikers. And neither one of those players is a true number nine. Neither one is somebody who really wants to play with their back to goal and bring others really into the game running off them. They love to combine. And that's really how the Dutch score their first goal in this game. It's Gakpo, no surprise there, in the 26th minute. It's the Netherlands in possession. Memphis Depay drops in. He's playing as the left forward. He drops in to receive the ball, and it's Depay and Gakpo and Klaassen who combine, and it's Klaassen to Gakpo who then scores the goal with his right foot from the edge of the box. And that was pretty much Qatar done and dusted about 30 minutes into this match. The Netherlands are really good at that kind of stuff. They like to combine. If you give them space between the lines, if you give them space to turn, they'll exploit it, and they certainly did that against Qatar today.
Taylor, if I'm picturing you at your happiest, I'm picturing, do you remember in Back to the Future where Biff has the alternate 1985 and he's in his hot tub and he's watching his TV?
I'm Biff in this scenario?
Hear me out.
All right.
You're Taylor in the scenario, but you're in the hot tub and you've got Tyler Adams on one arm, you've got Cody Gakpo on the other.
Correct.
And you're sitting there going, this is the best thing.
I mean, are they on my team? Like as long
oh,
as
yeah.
Okay, cool. As long as like they're in my five-a-side team versus Graham's team that he hates. I feel pretty good about my five-a-side team.
That was my illustration to say that you like both players very much, basically, by the way.
I do.
Not that you're Biff.
I think anytime I feel like I mean, you all have experienced this, getting predictions and like spotting a player in the preview that you're like, oh, that guy seems really good. It's really nice to see him live up to that hype, live up to that expectation a little bit. Cody Gakpo has been an electric player for the Dutch. He pops up in different spots. He can clearly score from wherever he wants to. I think my prediction was that he would get away from three defenders simultaneously and create something from nothing. And I'm going to say that's what this goal was today, him doing that. I was hoping Joe would lay that out himself so then I could just claim it without having to toot my own horn, but here we are. But yes, I think Cody Gakpo has been one of the biggest stories of this tournament, biggest like kind of breakout players. We've talked about who the James Rodriguez will be. Feels like it's going to be him. It's a shame that he has to be eliminated by the United States in only the knockout round, so we won't get to see more of him. But such is life. Such is life.
It's going to be hard seeing both those players on the field for you, Taylor, and one of them has to go.
Well, the nice thing about having the relationship I have with Cody Gakpo and Tyler Adams is that at the end of the game, Tyler and I can sort of comfort Cody. Cody and Tyler are not the players that I expected to be the big performers from this World Cup, I gotta say. Not really the names you think of. Zinedine, Thierry, Cody. Not quite the same.
Cody will still have his hoverboard, though, after he loses on Saturday. Mm. So that's a good consolation prize.
Arguably the greatest Cody since Agent Cody Banks, I would argue.
You made a sweet life of Zach and Cody today, didn't you?
Sweet life of Cody Gakpo.
There it is. There we are. Qatar's dismal showing means they became the first host nation to exit the tournament with three group stage losses, finishing bottom with no points.
Aww.
Womp, womp. They bad. They real bad. And we kind of knew that from match day one. They maybe got a little bit better and were a little less embarrassing from game to game. But
I wish you could see how unconvinced Joe's face is when he says those things.
I'm really not fully convinced. I think the Senegal game was a bit better for them, but they were thoroughly outclassed today by the Netherlands, which is nothing to feel shame about because the Dutch do have a lot of talent. But Qatar kind of phoned it in for this World Cup. I've seen them play better soccer than they played in any one of these three games. Whatever happened to this team, whatever went wrong for them, it went really wrong because this Qatar team never really threatened at all in this group. They did not put on a good showing, just dismal pretty much all around.
And it's a reminder of how difficult it is to build a good international soccer team where, you know, they had an eight-month training camp. They had Pep Guardiola as, a consultant. They had Xavi Hernandez in that country for a number of years.
Wait, sorry, Pep Guardiola was a consultant?
Yeah, he's signed to some sort of deal with Qatar. Yeah, he's some sort of consultant. Yeah,
really?
They have the Aspire Academy, which cost like $1 billion to construct, and all the scouting for that academy, and yet they still were very bad at their own World Cup.
If Pep wasn't a bold fraud, things might have been different, Joe.
Honestly, I mean, Pep really overthought this, didn't he, for the Qatar? I think we can trace it all the way back to Pep Guardiola overthinking.
All right, just one thing left to do on this here podcast. That's our very specific predictions for tomorrow. I think I got my VSP today, didn't I?
You did, yes. Kenneth Seiden, who's been tracking all of this for us in the Discord, thank you, Kenneth, said you did. I have no clue what you predicted, but he said you and I got our predictions right, and that's all I needed to know.
All right, check the Discord for further details. But let's go into tomorrow's games, the 10 a.m. games. It's Group D's denouement. We've got Denmark against Australia and Tunisia against France. Then after that at 2 p.m., Group C with Saudi Arabia versus Mexico and Poland against Argentina. Let's start off, Graham, with your prediction for Denmark versus Australia.
So my VSP for that game is that Mitchell Duke will win more aerial duels than any other player. I think Australia are going to reuse the strategy which worked well for them against Tunisia, and that's going to involve looking for Duke as often as possible with the crosses. I think Denmark might actually do something similar with Cornelius, and Kjær is strong in the air to defend against Duke. So there is a bit of... it's not guaranteed that I'm going to get this VSP, but I do predict that Duke will top the aerial duels one column for this one.
Graham, I believe a narrative that you established early on in this one was that it was the tournament of the big man, that we are returning to the big man on top. Is this your thesis statement if it's Cornelius versus Duke?
Yes, it is. Cornelius versus Duke is not how I expected this World Cup to go, particularly with Denmark.
Cody Tyler, Cornelius Duke. It's nothing that anybody had coming.
Yeah.
Cornelius versus Duke. I feel like we've gone into like basketball, college basketball for a second.
Yeah, it sounds like colleges.
What's happening here? the other game in Group D, Tunisia versus France. I am going to predict that Tunisia will have less than 75% pass success. Their pass success against Denmark was 75%. Their pass success against Australia was 76%. I think they've been a pretty disappointing team with no goals scored so far. Pretty long shot to qualify as it is for these games. I think they might try and go for it, and get a bit sloppy in this game. I think that will bring their pass success down. France are probably going to punish them, even if there is very little at stake for the French. Joe, tell me I did good.
You did good, Ryan. Thank you. Sorry, I also got a little distracted by multiple things. The sound that just came from someone's chair.
It was a chair.
And the other thing is, the USMNT just tweeted out that apparently Christian Pulisic has been diagnosed with a pelvic contusion. Mm-hmm. So that's how we're framing that, huh?
Yeah, that's one thing to call it, I guess.
That's another euphemism right there.
It seems that way.
Abdominal strain, pelvic contusion. Just say that he hurt his nuts.
He's got sore balls.
Okay. All right. Taylor, Saudi Arabia versus Mexico, your VSP, please.
All right. We made it almost to the end. We're definitely over an hour mark before the nonsense began. I'm going to say that Mexico will have their highest possession and XG expected goal stats of the tournament so far. Against Poland, 61% possession, 0.72 XG. Against Argentina, way less than that, 42%, 0.27. Obviously, they will need to get a result here, and even if they don't advance, they need a strong performance to round up this tournament, and I think that means they're going to have a ton of the ball and many, many, many shots.
Very nice. Last but not least, Joseph, Poland versus Argentina. What do you think?
Argentina are going to have at least 75% possession in the second half. They're going to be desperate because Poland are going to play antsy soccer, which is what they love to do. Graham loves Poland so much. I do too. Poland are going to make life difficult for Argentina, who still needs something out of this game. I expect Argentina to have to really push. I don't know that Poland are going to break. They'll bend happily. But if Argentina are going to get something here, I think it might be later on in the game, and they're really going to have to push for it.
Did you say if they're going to get something?
I mean, I don't know that it's fully guaranteed. Does anybody feel like Argentina are guaranteed to go through out of this group?
Possibly.
Yeah, no. None of us do, right? None of us do. So, I don't know. Time will tell.
Wowzers. All right, that's it for today's pod. Joe Lowry, thank you again for your services to podding.
Thank you. Thank you, Ryan.
Graham Rutherford, pleasure
potting.
As always, sir.
Thank you, Ryan Bailey.
And Taylor Rockwell. Love you, bad.
Love you, buddy. Congratulations to you on getting your prediction point, and Joe and me. Graham, good performance today, buddy. You tried your best.
Thanks. Thank you.
Showing up's half the battle, right?
Yeah, indeed.
Cool. All right, listener, thank you very much for joining us on this one. We'll be back, as always, on the feed tomorrow. But for now, bye!